Rock and roll.
Okay, then. Welcome to Paper Money, the biweekly podcast covering the business side of the game industry, from Owari to Old School Hack, from Avalon Hill and 3M to Old School Hack. I'm Ben Clark.
And I'm Red Kip.
Today is January 28th, 2010.
No, it's 2011, but it's a nice try anyway.
it happened. It's January 28th, 2011. Yes, yes it is.
But that's unless okay. You went through a time warp. I mean, maybe for you it is 2010.
No. It's just one. It's a good lead-in to our newest feature, which is corrections of the last show.
Oh, it's too bad that wasn't intentional, even.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. Then I'd be witty. As it is, I'm just slothful and, not very good at what I do. Anyways, our corrections for this week include, we got a nice post on the website from James Mathey. That's the correct pronunciation of James's name. Just to clear a few things, a few quick things up. Name is said with a long E at the end, math plus E. He goes, I own RPG Now, the world's largest RPG ebook download site, not RPG.net, which is owned by Skodos. We have, however, strongly partnered with them and are licensing the database engine. And he goes on to give us a little bit of information about Board Game Info. And he says, our goal at BGI is not to list every game. It's to list only games someone wants to rate, review, trade, etc. Just a backbone for the true nature of the site, which is a way to put quality reviews up front. Our major goal of our site is to allow local groups to use our site to promote and find local events in and out of stores. Eventually to replace meetup.com even. Thanks for your mention of us, James Mathey. And again, James, thanks for caring enough to correct us. And also, like I said, I like what they're trying to do. I see what they're trying. And we talked about this before, about one of their stated goal is to kind of do a cleaner thing that Board Game Geek is trying to do.
Right, right.
There's a lot of chaff on the geek.
Yes, that's a good term for it.
Yeah, it would be that'd be the best way to describe it. So, anyways, oh, hold on. Put that.
Didn't we talk about this last time?
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. And we also, by the way, for those of you who listened to the show last week, we built this thing up. There's this one thing that could change the game industry on it, you know, forever. Turn it on its ear in 2011. And then we said we're going to talk about it after we do this segment. And then we never talked about it.
Because we're cool. Because it's a teaser.
It's the old, yeah.
It's a cliffhanger.
How do you keep a turkey in suspense?
Huh?
I'll tell you tomorrow. Anyways. So the thing, Red, this is kind of your thing that you think could possibly change the 2011 gaming scene dramatically. So I'm going to let you tell everybody what the big thing is.
Well, the big thing is the Star Wars license. Can I get a drum roll or something? Cool music.
I don't know. There's no actual Star Wars product out right now.
There is none.
In the game industry.
WotC having dropped the license, gotten rid of the license last year. You know, it is sat idle now for over 6 months. And it has been acquired, though there has been no claim by the person who has acquired it that they have done so. Which is kind of an interesting situation. We've speculated as to why. Maybe a launch at the New York Toy Fair with product. Maybe the possibility of a tie-in to the new live action coming out. This, I believe it's in the fall. I'm not really sure on the schedule on that one. But the new live action Star Wars television. Not to be confused with a movie, which is also in theory live action.
Is Josh Whedon doing that one?
I don't know.
I'm not watching it.
There you go. But yeah, this is a huge license, as it is the, you know, it is all encompassing. It is the, I believe they refer to it as the hobby industry license. So it covers collectibles, CCGs and miniatures. It covers board games. It covers RPGs.
So you know that somebody who has this license, but you can't say because they haven't said.
I don't precisely know who has this license. I have some pretty good ideas who has this license. We do know for sure that it's been acquired because Lucasfilms has even kind of hinted to the fact. Mongoose, I believe it was back in November, said that the license had been acquired, but not by them, but they weren't at, they had been negotiating for it and didn't feel it was their prerogative to announce something that somebody else had, which is a nice touch on Mongoose's part. We do know a few other companies who were negotiating, and they've all stayed mum about it one way or the other.
Sure. All right. Now, Rhett, I'm going to jump in here and just say, hooey. Whoever bought it overpaid.
I don't know about that. There's a lot of money.
Did it save West End? Did it save
DeCipher? I don't know that it saved West End.
Did Faza have the Star Wars license at one
point? Oh, no. That was,
it was just Star Trek for their role.
That was Star Trek, which was owned by Paramount, and we won't go into the whole Paramount versus Lucasfilms deal.
Yeah, let's not do that. But the point I'm trying to say is that the Star Wars RPG did well, and then I don't know if it was the conversion. It went through various system changes. And I don't know if that's what killed it or whatnot, but I guess where I'm trying to go with this is the Star Wars miniatures did well for a while. And then, oh, look, another Stormtrooper. But I don't think in terms of gaming licenses, I think it's one of those licenses you got to pay through the nose to get, and you got to do bonkers numbers with it. And that's, I think, difficult to do.
Well, I agree on the, you have to do bonkers numbers. The advantage of it is I think you can do bonkers numbers with it. It's a huge RPG. It was always successful. West End, people still look for the West End D6 RPG version of it. People liked the two versions that Wizards has done, the second one more than the first one because it actually let you play Jedi better. It really comes down to a balancing act. And frankly, I think that the people I know that are in the running for it, I think they're better than average on the balancing act. I think they'll come out with a really, really hot RPG on this. And that, like the Lord of the Rings one, is more a question of can you get it right on your end versus the license end.
I guess here's where I'm going with this. I used to print a board game. It was a NASCAR trivia game, okay? And they paid NASCAR on the order of $2 to $4 million for the license. Plus, they then had to give them a percentage.
Right.
And it's a trivia game, okay? So it's NASCAR trivia, which means that the old stuff doesn't change too much, but you've still got to refresh it every year. Or else nobody's going to buy it because the drivers and the teams change so much. So they were doing bonkers numbers. They were selling the hell out of it in Walmart. The problem is that for when you pay $2 to $4 million for a license, even if you do bonkers numbers, it's you might still not make any money.
Well, I think the people who are doing this, who've taken this license, probably have a pretty good idea of how to make money with it. I don't think there's anybody there that's far from it. And the answer is putting product out on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. I won't disagree. Product is important, and it is a great license. Certainly in role-playing terms, it's a much better license than Star Trek.
Well, and I think its advantages are numerous, including the fact that perhaps its greatest liability has been it's pretty limited on imagery for like the collectible miniatures line, the collectible spaceship line. There really aren't that many ships out there. There really aren't that many characters out there. And they had a scramble to try to find stuff. I mean, when they went to the novels, they went to the video games, they did everything. Because frankly, most people can name off a dozen of the main characters and we're done,
Sure.
And the
Admiral Ackbar.
Admiral Ackbar, it's a trap.
New possible mascot for University of Mississippi. Or was it Mississippi State? No, University of Mississippi.
University of Mississippi.
Well, they're running rebels, right? Yeah, they wanted to get rid of the colonel, right? Their Confederate colonel mascot. So they had the students vote and they were gonna do Admiral Ackbar.
I think Admiral Akbar would be very cool for the Running Rebels.
I think that would be insanely awesome, especially because it's in Mississippi.
Yeah, you know, and a big calamari guy. Hey, there you go.
Okay. Anyways, let's move on from the subject. Suffice to say, we apologize. We waited this long to talk about the Star Wars license. Red thinks it's a real game changer. I think it's a thing. But if nobody announces a GTS, then the next show that I expect to hear anything about it would be Star Wars to tie in for the fall with the TV series.
Yeah, and you know,
I expect it to run late, which means they'll announce it at Gen Con, and we will not see any product until right before Christmas. If indeed there's an announcement.
I was going to say, I'll wait for the announcement before I speculate any further on that.
Yeah,
I want to know somebody fesses up to, you know, we do have this license.
Yeah, I don't understand that. Because, like I said, there's...
I think they're waiting to have product. I think they want to launch it, and they want to launch it big. And they don't want to just, you know, say, we've got the license. I think they want to say, we've got the license, and here's what we're doing. And, by the way, it's coming out in 3 months.
Yeah, well, I don't know. See, that's like a big internet thing now, is the developer diaries that you know, you build up, you know, anticipation for a product before it comes out.
Well, if they're Gen Con releases, let's just speculate that far, okay, that they're Gen Con releases. If they make the announcement at Toy Fair, that's plenty of time. Yeah. That's still a 6 month run up.
I'd say, given if it's an RPG product, they could even announce it at GTS.
Well, and I think it's going to be more than a single product. I think that's kind of the plan, okay, is that they're going to have a number of products come out.
All right. We're not talking.
All right, we're going on. We're moving on.
We're moving on. We did an hour and a half show last week. Our last show. So
we could do that on Star Wars. Here we go.
Just on Star Wars. And I'm to blame, too. I'm the one who brought up Admiral Akbar. All right, let's move on to the news.
Go ahead. Okay. Our next one, speaking of Wizards of the Coast.
Yes. For those of you who missed it, we alluded to this in the last show, so I'm not going to do a huge thing on it. Wizards of the Coast dropped several of their core titles. They dropped... Well, basically, HeroScape. We knew they dropped Star Wars, and now they dropped a bunch. They dropped the D&D miniatures. And what else did they?
Dropped the collectible part of the D&D miniatures.
No, they dropped the non-collectible too.
They said they are going to continue with the non-collectibles.
Okay,
but I think that's because they can make money off of that since they can charge a different price.
Yes, and then they also killed some of the books.
They killed a number of the books that they had previously announced for summer for fourth edition, one of which is being consolidated in, or a number of which I think are being consolidated into a single book. But, there's a lot of speculation running around right now on what exactly is going on with fourth edition.
All right, what's the over-under here on this? The odds that this is because they're going to announce fifth edition at Gen Con. Likely, not likely.
Boy, I'm skeptical of them announcing 5th edition this year Gen Con, because that would mean in order to release it in a year, which is the target date, obviously, it would be so Memorial Day weekend of 2012. I don't know that that's enough time to do an RPG that no one has heard rumor about being designed and developed and play tested.
Okay.
So even if they are going to fifth edition, I'm thinking 2013.
All right. So, all right, that's fine. I just wanted to get your speculation out of
you. I speculated fourth edition 2.5 years before the announcement on fourth edition.
Oh.
So about the time they started work on it is when I figured out that they were going to release the thing.
Okay. So you were accurate then.
No, I was inaccurate because I didn't think they were going to wait that long.
Oh, gotcha. All right. So, all right. The other thing, Nirishima Hex just became an iPad title.
Woohoo! Another one moving over.
Well, we talked about that. Is that, you know, is that a profitable niche? Is that something to consider as part of your marketing strategy for games? The answer is yes. Nirishima Hex was a great game, came out a few years ago. There was an iPhone version of it. But they just retooled it to run on iPad, and I'm seeing more and more of this. Certainly, Memoir 44 is online. You know that one's, I think, going to be headed to iPad. There's a lot that is, certainly I have Carcassonne. I've got Settlers. You know, these are just on my iPhone. And on the iPad, it's a great board gaming experience. And I think that, well, let me put this way, I'd rather play the board game. But I guess where I'm going with this is that there's money to be made here, either for you licensing your title or producing one.
Absolutely. You know, I really do think the electronic medium is expanding it. This took me back a number of years ago when I talked to a bunch of people about the idea, well, you know, have you played Monopoly? Have you played Risk? And they said, sure, I played them. I play them all the time on my computer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, pause on my part and go, computer? No, the game. Have you actually played the game? Which they hadn't. They'd never heard of the board games. So, yeah, I think this is a huge market and a great place to go if you can do it.
Correct. Yeah, I do think that there are limitations on what will adapt well. Certainly for board games, real name recognition helps, even, you know, in the hobby industry. But
So you don't think Avalon Civilization is going to make it to my iPad anytime soon, huh?
You know, I, as one who played and enjoyed the computer version of Avalon Hill's Advanced Civilization, I would pony up immediately for an iPad version of said game.
I might even go out and buy an iPad if they did that one.
Yeah, quite frankly. Okay, next story. Stratomatic turned 50.
Ha, I got them beat.
Well,
oh,
well, you just gave up the ghost on that one, Rhett. I guess for those of you who don't know, Stratomatic, again, it's 50 years old. The original stat-driven sports game. I mean, this was hardcore before there was hardcore.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, this was a simulation before anyone else had even thought of doing anything remotely like it.
It made a big enough splash that it convinced 3M to do their sports line, which eventually became the Avalon Hill titles.
Yeah, exactly. And you got to, again, and this was 50 years ago. This is what, 1961? This is before anyone in the war game industry occurred that maybe as part of a simulation of a war, you wouldn't just throw dice to determine how far you move. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that was what, Gettysburg?
Yeah.
That was 1965. I think. Again, so Stratomatic is still going strong. There's a computer version, really has legs. I actually have a copy and have never had a chance to play. I know at least one of our loyal listeners is a huge Stratomatic hockey fan, but again, Stratomatic, groundbreaking game, always thought it was kind of cool, and it turned 50.
Yeah, there we go.
And it's still going on, still going strong.
Makes me feel young.
Something. I'm glad something does.
Well, that and rocks.
The ones people throw at you, or?
You know, just the fact that they're older than I am.
Gotcha.
In general. I stay out of Hawaii for that reason.
You know, as the other day on my Facebook page, I posted that I was feeling a bit old on the way into work, and then I turned on the Violent Femmes Blister in the Sun, downshifted and stepped on the gas, and then I felt younger again. And Rich Curtin of Games Plus, where you work, posted, really? Violet Femmes made you feel young? Yeah.
I like Rich.
He's a nice man. So.
He knows how to hit below the belt nicely.
No, that's fine. So he makes me laugh. I'll kill him last. Anyways. Oh, hold on. Yes. Mattel is doing an Angry Birds board game. Quick, act surprised.
What?
Okay, that was pretty good. Yes, Mattel is doing an Angry Birds board game. If you haven't seen this on the interwebs, you just haven't been paying attention. It's like all over the my news reports, like a rash. And as someone who is an avid iPhone user, I don't own Angry Birds, and at this point, I refuse to.
Yeah, well, it's huge. Though it is more popular, I think, with a younger crowd than an older crowd.
Well, see, the Angry Birds, Plants vs. Zombies, and any of a zillion tower defense games, they're designed to play on mobile devices.
Okay? Right.
The gameplay is fairly repetitive, but each episode is intense, and it's not super long. Yes, this is going to appeal to a younger crowd because you and I are going to, well, one, we're board gamers and role players and miniatures players.
But yeah, I actually take some time to play a game.
Correct. But anyway, suffice to say, there is going to be... I said it twice again. God damn it. There is going to be an Angry Birds board game. And this is, well, and again, it's Mattel, okay? So Mattel still kind of eating away at Hasbro's board game market just a little bit by a little bit, getting a license like this.
Interesting. Yeah, well, they're really after it. And, you know, I think there's a lot of competition out there from big players. You know, Mattel, we talked about earlier with the Lego going into board games and continuing on in that vein. Yeah, I'm waiting for Playmobil. Playmobil will be the last kick in the shins to Hasbro.
And so far, that's really all it is, a kick in the shins. Hasbro is still the 950,000-pound gorilla in that market. Moving on, speaking of the anti-Hasbro, Exilis maker Bastion shut down in December. Now, I was online today trying to establish whether or not they'd started back up, because they have, in fact, they did announce new product, but I don't know if that was in the pipe. Because you know they do miniatures, which you know with a long lead time. So, but Exilis is currently, as far as I know, still shut down. If anyone knows better, let me know. But again, they made a strong showing. Exilis had some really neat gameplay ideas, and it didn't apparently wasn't. In fact, according to the website, their sales were increasing. The popularity of the game is increasing, but obviously. Not quite enough to cover the capital outlay that we're looking at.
Yeah, you know, earlier this year, Rackham, which is another, in their case, collectible miniatures company, plastic, pre-built plastic stuff, you know, they shut down. And that would be their second or third time in their history that they had to do that. And maybe they'll come back. You know, their design team, their sculpting team, et cetera, they're all over the industry. I mean, you know, you can't turn around without bumping into one of these guys when it comes to a miniatures thing.
Who, Exilis or Rackham?
No, Rackham.
Oh, Rackham.
Rackham. You know, and again, a company that was reasonably well-financed at the beginning and just not quite able to make a go of it.
Well, and you know, I will give them kudos. Really, they did everything right, I thought, in terms of the cards that they had to play. They got the name out there. They were heavy at the cons. They went, they, you know, they promoted on the Geek. It was a new idea. It was different. And unfortunately, I think, I'm going to say that it's the miniatures market right now.
I tend to agree with you. I know that there is, I guess the best way to describe it was there was a hostile takeover, and because I don't know enough information, we've kept it off the news, but one of the other plastic miniatures groups out of the UK is claiming a hostile takeover having just occurred. And, you know, that's really strange. I mean, we've not seen this before. We don't see companies like Ralph Arth Iron Wind or Reaper or GW just kind of disappear overnight. You know, there's a lot of indication that things are, you know, turning bad, going south.
Well, I think that this is less a statement on that than the statement that the collectible miniatures has, I won't say it's run its course, but it's settled down. Certainly the DC Hero Click stuff and the, you know, the superhero clicks is doing okay. But I think that miniatures games are like I said, again, there's always a core audience, certainly for Games Workshop and stuff like that. But I don't think the plastics are bringing new people into the hobby, or if they are, they're bringing them into plastics and they're not necessarily going into something else. But anyways, I hope that we're wrong, that they're not permanently shut down. But because like I said, I do think they did a lot of things right, including, by the way, start with a sufficient amount of capital to promote their new idea. But let's move on to our next news item.
The New York Toy Fair, would that be?
Nah, we'll talk about New York Toy Fair in a minute. I just put that in the news section to remind myself to talk about it. This summer, WizKids will publish Quarriors, a dice game where you build up an army of dice in much the same way that a deck-building game lets you build a deck. The game comes with 130 custom dice and cards that represent creatures you need to beat and spells you can cast. No shuffling required. This is from the Purple Pawn, our wonderful, wonderful sponsor. And I'd just like to say I'm in agreement with the person who posted underneath that story who said, haven't we already seen this story come from TSR? Is this Dragon Dice Redo?
Is it Dragon Dice Redo? I don't. Well, it's certainly a different spin on it. It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see what the dice are like. If the dice are cool, you know, people like dice. I can't tell you how many sets of dice we sell at the store, but suffice it to say that it's an enormous.
Yes, not because it's a trade secret. It's just that you have no clue.
It's an enormous amount of dice. Every week we get two shipments in, and you know, the one I did today was probably something on the order of about 40 dice sets.
So, all right.
People like dice.
Okay. If that's the case. All right. And again, those of you who are fans of this game can go ahead and phone in or write in and tell me I'm an ass. But if that's the case, why is there still that one company at Gen Con selling new old stock on Dragon Dice? Every year they show up and their booth gets a little smaller.
Yeah.
I think next year they're due to be sharing a booth with Flying Buffalo. sorry, I'm teasing Flying Buffalo. The point is that I saw the dice. I saw pictures of the dice online. I didn't see the cards. I remember wanting to like Dragon Dice and was not necessarily able to get into it.
It's a very odd. It's somewhat too abstract and very little visual appeal, which is, I think, where they have an advantage this time. Where they're going with the cards.
Well, and the Dyson Couriers looked a little better. I just wonder if this is I find the idea ill conceived. I wish them the best of luck.
Yahtzee still sells really well,
which is absurd. here's why. Do you know what you need to play Yahtzee? Score pad.
I was going to say a score pad, a pencil, and five dice.
Folks, if you ever want to play Yahtzee, you can. I guarantee you there's a place on the internet you can find a score pad illegally posted, print a copy out, and use your any five dice you like. Preferably all with the same number of sides. Anyways, I digress. So WizKids is coming out with Couriers. Rhett, do you think it's a good idea, yes or no?
Actually, I think it's a cool choice for them to make. I think it's gutsy, which is what I like about it more than anything else. I'm not sure about the product.
I'll take the other side of it. I'm just going to say it's not gutsy. It's intellectually bankrupt.
I also like some of the other stuff that WizKids is doing this year. I got to say, I like it a lot better. I think the Star Trek license and the Lord of the Rings license are both really good choices.
Correct.
So we'll see how this one goes. Well, you're allowed one screw up if you have two big successes.
Yes, creepy freaks. and the 1-to-1 scale Shadowrun miniatures game.
You know, 10 years later, I'm still baffled. What can I say?
They were huge.
They were huge and totally unplayable.
I had a Shadowrun dwarf that could kick the crap out of a 12-inch G.I. Joe figure. I'm thinking
it would have had no problem, yeah.
All right, sorry about that. Yeah,
even the skinny, you know, street samurai chick, I think, could have taken Joe.
Yeah, I think so, too.
And I mean the old Joe, not even the little action figure Joe.
She had a BFG, though, I think.
Yeah, she did have a BFG and a big katana to go with it.
Yeah. All right, let's move on from obscure miniatures games to board game news. And this is something that, as we're like I said, with board game info coming into the market, board game news has undergone. This is from the Purple Pawn. I love this phrase. I wish. Here, let me see. Let me see who wrote that article. Was that our buddy? No, that was Shay John. Okay, that was Yehuda. So, but here, this is the phrase. I have to read this story just for this. Board game news has undergone parthenogenesis. Eric and possibly others are now blogging at Board Game Geek, while many of the other contributors have founded The Opinionated Gamers. Meanwhile, you can feed Board Game Info News, which includes the Purple Pawn feed, as well as articles from Scott Nicholson and Shannon Apple, is it Apple Klein, who was also a BGN contributor. And that's from, that feed is from Game Salute, which includes, anyways, Tom Vassell reviews and other stuff. So anyways, Board Game News has split. Now, I remember the Christmas before last, Eric was looking to charge more for the membership to the site. And I think he was having problems monetizing Board Game News. And that's one of the reasons I'm guessing that this happened. Personally, I haven't done any more research than what I read on the Purple Pawn. So I apologize. But I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. The Board Game News site was going towards much longer analytical articles than necessarily news. And I think that tying in with Board Game Geek or doing something that's very much, that says right out front, opinionated gamers, as I give me an excellent use for the same content.
I tend to agree on that one. It's, you know, this is really more editorial than it is review.
Yeah. Could we, by the way, could we get any more meta than commenting on the commenters at this point?
You like that, huh?
Yeah. We're definitely post-postmodern at this point, folks. That said, let's move in to reader mail. Because now we have commenters commenting on the commentators.
That's so cool.
Isn't it? Yeah. It's like when you hold a mirror up in front of the mirror.
Whoa. Yeah, really, you know?
It's
or the snake eating itself, which is always
one. Given that this is paper money, the thought of doing that, it's a Hasselhoffian recursion.
Yeah, I think you've been waiting the entire Genesis to now of this show to use that phrase.
You know, if I'd thought about it, I would have worked it in a year ago. But yes, we're now approaching the point of Hasselhoffian recursionism. And folks, if you don't know what that is, I dare you to Google it. That said, okay, this is a good letter from Alan Kaiser, and he covers a little bit of ground that we just covered about the D&D stuff. But it's a nice letter, so I want to go ahead and read it. Hey, guys, here are a couple of questions that I'd like to hear your thoughts on. And, Alan, you've probably already heard them 5 minutes ago. I saw the news that WotC's dropping the D&D mini line. They've dropped their three biggest lines of minis, Heroescape, Star Wars, and now D&D, in the last 6 months or so. Is this a more widespread issue, and will we be seeing other pre-painted plastic mini lines dropping like flies over the next year, or is this just a WotC issue? At WotC, this leaves the Axis and Allies line of pre-painted minis as the only one remaining, I think. And again, I think the D&D non-collectible might still be there.
That's what they claim.
Okay. And overall, in the collectible minis market, the only ones left are the Clix lines, Hero and Horror. Monsterpocalypse and the World of Warcraft minis. Maybe Arcane Legions as well, if they are still around. What does the future of pre-painted plastic collectible minis look like? As our production costs just getting too high for this format to remain profitable? And in a nutshell, I think pre-painted plastic collectible minis, the production costs are actually probably going down, but I think the real problem is that sales have gone below the point at which it's hard to make money at this. Exilus, I think, being a good example.
Yeah, even though they weren't pre-painted, I'll go along with you there.
Sorry.
The big thing though is on the pre-paints. I think that the return, the margins, the number of players, etc., are the problem. Now, the spin on this still is WizKids basically turning more and more profitable all the time from their own statements. You know, that they've done a better job of it. They've concentrated a little bit more on what's successful. You know, they got another Star or Marvel product coming out. Again, tie into the movies with the Thor. They've got the Star Trek license, like I said. They now have announced that they're going to be doing a Lord of the Rings skirmish game, which is really interesting because it seems to be cooperative. Which will be a different spin on any of the minis.
I'm looking forward to that game just so I can buy the non-collectible part of the game called Box of Orcs.
Box of Orcs.
Because really, if you're playing Boromir, you've got to slay, you know, you need like 50 to 1 in terms of the orc to Boromir.
Yeah, it's a decent ratio.
Yeah.
I give you odds on at that point. Under that, you know, I'm still putting money on Boromir.
Yeah, 50 to 1 on Boromir. Okay. And second, this is, again, still continuing Alan's letter. And second, what's up with D&D? WotC seems to be running around like a bunch of zombies trying to figure out who their target audience for this product is. The 4th edition really hasn't found a core audience yet, it seems. The traditional fans of D&D seem all upset with the 4th edition product and its direction. WotC seemed to aim the product squarely at the World of Warcraft crowd initially in an effort to draw some of them back to the hobby gaming market, but that doesn't seem to have worked. They moved from the traditional hardcover books to softcover, and now it seems they are dropping the softcover small format books and moving back to hardcover. Is anyone in charge at WotC? And in the latest madness, they're releasing D&D fortune cards, which turns D&D into a collectible card game. The guys that paid so must be laughing their butts off all the way to the bank. I saw the fortune cards, by the way. Purple Pawn had a story on it the other day, and I did have a WTF moment on that.
Yeah, we had samples in at the store, and I've actually seen them and seen the concept of the play and everything else. All I can do is scratch my head and go, is it a dartboard? Do they use a roulette wheel? Do they try tea leaves?
Chicken entrails.
The chicken entrails. No, I think you can actually get some better results with the entrails.
Well, this is a case of a spoofed product imitating the product spoofing it. All right, I think they picked this idea up from Munchkin, where if you wear the Munchkin T-shirt to the game, you got a plus one.
Yeah, actually, I think it has to do with a spin they got off of the Gamma World game. Gamma World does this, but Gamma World seems to be directly shooting at the one-off concept behind it, which also seemed to be what's going on big with the way Wizards is promoting 4th edition. The big promotion for 4th edition is Encounters. Encounters is a one-off. You know, you show up to the fight, you beat the bad guys for the week, you grab some stuff, and then you fight a different encounter the following week. I think the biggest personal spin, anybody over at Wizards listening, how about putting role-playing back in your role-playing game?
Pshaw. Hey, speaking of Gamma World, can you still play an ambulatory plant in the latest version of that?
I haven't a clue. You're kind of randomized on what you get for abilities, you know, powers and equipment. And then that's what the cards are all about. They're the random element that adds to. Today, you have telekinesis. The next time you play, you get another random power.
Okay. All right. Sorry, I didn't mean to take us into Gamma World territory. I just came across it online earlier today. But anyways, to finish out Alan's letter, which we've made extremely long, in my email of predictions for 2011, I should have had it another WotC drops off the face of the planet in 2011. Thanks for the laughs and all the great info. Looking forward to hearing more in 2011. Alan Kaiser.
Well, Alan, that was a cool line. You got me laughing over that one, and that's not easy to do.
Yeah, I think it'll be wrong, but he is right. There does seem to be some confusion over at WotC as to, well, really, what, I don't know, what is it? Are they concerned about what market they're in? Do they, you know, I don't know. But anyways, I'm not going to go there because I wanted to do a short show this week after our hour and a half.
We could do a show speculating about Wizards of the Coast. My big prediction for Wizards of the Coast is at some point Peter buys them back.
Ooh, I think that'd be that'd be interesting.
I think it's a possibility still, and I think it gets to be more of a possibility every year at the rate they're going.
Then they could, you know, then they could do a Bella Sarah collectible miniatures game.
Oh, victory to Ben for this week.
Thank you very much. And Hasselhoffian Recursion and Bella Sarah, the collectible miniatures game. Thank you very much. Oh, we're going to end the podcast now. All right. Anyways, hey, moving on. We have one more. Well, we have two more letters. This one I have to read just because it's gratifying to me, sort of. This is from Grandmaster B. He says, I think you may say anyways as often as you like wish. Clearly, this is a crutch in your speech left over from childhood you still carry today as kind of a safety blanket. Therefore, saying anyways is one way to help keep you happy and calm, therefore making you a more productive member of society. However, if you wish to try an alternative to anyways, how about the following? Quote, this one time at band camp, or when I was in the Army. Army is, of course, replaceable with Navy, Air Force, Coast Guard, Boy Scouts, etc., whatever group service you've been a member of. And if you really want to go for broke, you could do anyways this one time at band camp in the Army. Love the podcast. Just tossing some more gas on the fire. Keep up the good work, Grandmaster B. So thank you very much, Mr. B. I appreciate it. And once I get rid of the anyways, I'll try and work on the ums and we'll sound a little bit more professional. But until then, I'm going to at least rely on my ums and a few anyways.
Yeah. So Linus, what's our next letter?
Thank you very much. You know, he had more hair than Charlie Brown.
And so did his sister.
And a cool stripy shirt.
And a cool stripy shirt.
Yeah. And, okay, this is from a gentleman identifies as his
name. He hung out with a dog.
Yes.
Just saying.
All right. Well, you got to forget it. From Dave. Hi, Ben and Rhett. I'm an aspiring game designer, and I had a few questions. One, I know it varies, but for the average retail store, what is a ballpark estimate of how many copies they sell of a top seller in a year, like Carcassonne or Ticket to Ride, versus a more average game? Now, he doesn't give an example of a more average game. He goes, is it 200 a year, 50 a year, 10 a year? And two, along the same lines, I'm curious to know the total lifetime sales figures for some of the top-selling games versus successful games versus average games, because I've had a hard time finding this data on the internet. It's probably also different for more mass-market games versus gamer games. For instance, how many copies of Carcassonne / Dominion versus a Pandemic versus an average game? How many copies of Puerto Rico / Agricola versus Battlelore or San Juan versus an average game? I'm trying to get at the market potential of various degrees of successful games. I bet a lot of your listeners would be interested if you regularly included some monthly or quarterly sales numbers for various games in your news roundup. Thanks, Dave. And Dave, I have to say, oh, hell yeah, they'd be really interested. The problem is that there's no way to get those numbers.
Yeah, we would have everybody in the industry listening, one, to hear what everybody else was doing, and two, to shut us down for having gotten inside information on what their sales rates were like.
Yeah, there's a reason you can find it on the internet, and the reason is that it's not public.
It is very proprietorial.
As someone who has worked for a printer, I have a better insight into the numbers that certain people are doing more than other people, because they had to call me and say, this is how many I want printed. And we've talked about that a little bit on the show, and I'll come back to that in a second. But realistically, it does vary wildly as to what constitutes a big seller in this. Now, Rhett, I want you to talk a little bit about the store level, and then I'm going to back out to more the manufacturer level, and you can talk on that too. But at the store...
At the store level, the basic objective of a store is to turn a section 4 times a year. That's the entire line of that product. So that varies, though, on what it is. So we'll give an example. Carcassonne, which has a number of expansions. Carcassonne itself may sell a dozen to two dozen units in a year. It may have expansions that only sell 3 times a year, 2 times a year. That would be, for that line, that would be kind of low. But that's the kind of situation that we're talking on. And the bigger the line, therefore the older the line is, the slower some of the products are going to turn. You might effectively, you get diminishing returns with all of it. A new product does well, but once it's been out there for a while, they drop off faster than the original ones. So you get the core game selling. You tend to get the first supplement that people will follow up on. Again, like I say, at that point, it's diminishing returns, and especially as they're older and older products.
Correct. And that's the thing is that one of the things that certainly the role-playing game market has capitalized on is that long tail. It's new product driven, but if you have a successful title, you can put out supplements to it, and it will bump the other supplements in the core product at the store level. Now, going back to, how many copies does everything sell? Okay. The answer is fewer than you think on most titles and more than you think on some of the others. Okay. I mean, Rhett, I'm going to talk about board games because that's what I know
sure.
about. But let's say you're not Mayfair or Rio Grande, or Rio Grande, another one of the big A-list game publishers, okay? A good selling game for you as a new game company is going to sell 2,500 copies in the U.S. market. Okay. If you do really well out of the gate, you will sell 5,000 copies in the U.S. market.
And if you're
really, really, really lucky, you will sell 10,000 copies because you partnered with the Europeans and you got to sell your 2,000 to 5,000 U.S. copies at printing them at the 10 to 15,000 price. But that really is for a hobby market title. All right. That's a decent number. Okay. Now, it's expensive to produce just 2,500 of a game. In fact, if you look at the numbers, by the way, there's a massive hockey stick, whereas 1,000 is about the minimum you'll want to do on a board game. 2,500 is a bit of a sweet spot between 5 and 10,000. Your economics of scale really start to kick in. But 2,500 is a decent sweet spot for you. The problem is if you can combine those, right? If you have to get those printed in China and you have to rent a container, that container could cost you $5,000. Okay, so that's $2.50 a game. It's a dollar game. To hell with it. It's $2 a game. Anyways, the point is that if you can produce two games that sell 2,500, your economics just got a whole ton better. Now, that said, if you look at a game like Settlers of Catan, okay, Settlers of Catan does a gazillion, six-figure sales between the core game and its add-ons yearly, okay? Milton Bradley does, I want to say they produce a million copies of Monopoly every year in Longmeadow, New Jersey at their plant there. That might have dropped off a little bit because they're now running out time at the Longmeadow plant for people producing their games. The non-core Monopoly stuff, the collector's edition Monopoly stuff, you see like Spider-Man Monopoly, these all probably do. Spider-Man's probably a bad example. Beatles might be a little bit harder. I think Beatles does, like, they'll print 10,000 of them. That'll probably go for, and they'll let that go out of print over the course of 2 or 3 years. So that said, it's difficult to say what you need to produce that. Right? If you're an aspiring game designer, and I'm sorry, I'm going on and on about this with some of these numbers. If you're an aspiring game designer, if you can sell your first 1,000, right? Actually, not as a designer, as a publisher. If you sell your first 1,000 within 6 months, you have done extremely well because you've recouped all your costs. If it takes you 5 years to sell your first 2,500, that's too long, right? Most of the time, you're going to want to print for 12 to 18 months worth of supply. But anyways, I'm going on and on and on, Red. I kept thinking you were going to jump in with me on some of this.
Oh, I was just going to let you keep going and then come in after you're done because I was going to cover other areas.
Okay. Then I'll stop talking, and I think you can probably talk about role-playing games a little bit better than I can.
Yeah, role-playing games, it seems right now that a good role-playing game, and we're not talking an indie game here, we're talking a reasonably well-accepted game hitting the market, you're probably looking between 3,000 and 5,000 units as your initial run. Hopefully that's going to last you less than a year. Your target would be 3 to 6 months. The big boys, the ones that are out there hitting the market and, you know, tearing up the numbers, on the launch of the core game, now we're talking the main RPG itself, this core system and not its supplements, those are shooting for anywhere from 50 to 100,000 units.
So we're talking about like an AD&D type launch.
We're talking an AD&D, a Paizo, probably the Warhammer stuff that's being done by Fantasy Flight.
GURPS. Sorry.
At one time that could have been the case.
No, it would have been. I understand GURPS 4th edition was not insanely well received by a lot of people.
To give back numbers, because I don't feel this gives away too much information anymore, the initial shipment of Shadowrun 3rd edition was 35,000 units. It was out of print instantly. It was actually theoretically out of print before it actually returned from the printer. It took 90 days for FOSSA to catch the numbers up, at which point it was closer to about 60,000 units. Now, those are the heydays of RPGs.
Yes.
And there wasn't 400 billion RPGs on the market because publishing has become a lot ways easier. And there are more companies out there competing. But realistically, if I were chewing an RPG and I sold less than 5,000 copies in a year, I would be looking for the next RPG design as opposed to worry too much about supplements.
So for a printed RPG, you should be doing basically double the numbers at least that you're talking about, that I'm talking about for a decent board game.
I would say you probably are shooting for that. That would be your not breaking into the market, but you're actually succeeding in the market. The problem would come out to be, you know, the indie press guys. There's a lot of the stuff in the indie press that might actually do close to those numbers, but more likely those guys are shooting in the 1,000 market range. Again, that's a different format. It's a different marketing scheme, and you can still be successful because, again, it comes down to, you know, how much money are you investing into each of these steps?
Yes, and you know? It's so much easier to digitally print a book than it is to digitally print a board game. So
right.
you can do micro sales on an RPG and turn a profit, or you can do RPG Now. You can do PDF sales of your product unless you're WotC.
Go down that. You know, electronics again seems to be beyond their comprehension.
Anyways, long story short, let's sum this up for Dave and everybody else. One, the only place you will see sales ranking numbers in like Game Trade Magazine, and some of those will have a top 10 list either from the distributor or from a retailer, but there's rarely any numbers. There's really almost never any numbers. Rhett and I know because Rhett was at FASA when Shadowrun came out, and I know numbers because I used to print stuff, but it's not out there. People don't necessarily want you to know how many they're printing.
Yeah. I mean, I spent 15 years in distribution, and I knew roughly my position in the market versus other distributors, and therefore could try to benchmark what that meant. The problem was I couldn't look at book trade sales at all, had no benchmark for book trade sales.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out that what I thought was not quite as important was actually about 50% of the market.
Yeah, exactly. So there's, again, it's something that that everybody, none of these are public companies with the exception of really Games Workshop, so they don't have to report numbers. And then, two, in terms of, you know, what separates a top-selling game, I think we covered that ad nauseum. But realistically, in the hobby market, if you sell 2,500 to 5,000 of a title in the first 6 to 12 months, that was a good launch for a board game. Now, you have to remember, you have to have your second game ready to go at the end of that time frame, because otherwise what's going to happen is sales on that first title are going to die off and nobody's going to be looking at it, but that's like a whole other story. We're going to get into marketing, aren't we, Red?
Would all be about marketing.
All right. Thank you, Dave. That was an excellent, excellent question. And my dream of a short show has just flown right out the window. Now, that said, Rhett, how can they contact us so we can have more long-winded answers?
Well, first they can email us at papermoney@purplepawn.com. Or you can Skype us at Paper Money Podcast or phone us at 773-634-9377. Still want my jingle.
Yeah, what can I say? That said, you know, we were going to have a big discussion about New York Toy Fair.
It's going to happen.
It will happen eventually.
February.
Yeah, we've gotten to the point in the show where normally we would have the discussion. But we realized that the February 11th show, which is our next show, comes out on the eve of Toy Fair. So we'll talk about it then.
We'll save it.
Because I think we're already doing about a 60-minute show or something.
I was going to say, because if we keep going at this rate, we'll be talking through the New York Toy Fair.
You know, and having talked through New York Toy Fair before on the floor, I don't have a desire to do it again. That said, the next thing, by the way, it says upcoming stuff, and there's nothing underneath it because we just talked about what's coming up next, which is going to be our Toy Fair show. And you know what I'd like to hear from listeners is, what do you guys want to know about Toy Fair? Because I've gone a bunch, and I have an opinion on it. We've talked about the show a couple of times.
You have an opinion? Go ahead.
That's my job. My name is Clark. I have an opinion. But let us know if there's something you want to know about New York Toy Fair, because maybe we had new listeners who didn't hear us.
Where's the New York Toy Fair go on? Where's it take place?
Midtown, at the Jacob Javits Center.
But where?
Oh, I see. You're funny. Actually, it's theoretically not called New York Toy Fair. You know that, right?
Yeah.
That's just what everyone calls it.
Yeah.
You can Google it, and
it's
actually
like
the
Toy Expo Fair or something. It's got some.
Yeah, it's the Toy Industry Association. It's the TIA. Yeah, something.
Yeah, it's got this really long-winded name. Just Google it. Which is why everybody calls it
New York Toy Fair. That said, Rhett, take us out of here.
Well, as stated before, our next show will be February 11th. And, you know, that's all for this one. I'm Rhett Kipp.
Thank God. And I'm Ben Clark. I mean, thank God that that's all for this show. Thank God. Thank God I'm Ben Clark. Yeah. Well, thank God I'm Ben Clark.
Alternatives. I've met your friends.